You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
Bonjour, no.
And it's me, Brian. Hoping that his voice is on the recording as well, because he installed something else which had a microphone on it and is worried about the delicate balance of voice meter banana and fake cable inputs and outputs on his computer. Anyway, there's no JoJo's, so this week we are still in the realm of Let's Go, and on this episode we are covering the anime that aired the week of the 15th of July all the way through to the 21st of July. On the Sundays, that's Monday to Sunday. And we kick off.
It's a weird limbo without JoJo being definitely over or definitely on.
Yeah. We don't know how to, like, schedule our lives anymore. The order has been upended.
But yeah, The other problem is everything we're watching is, like, right. It's not really Monday to Sunday. It's Thursday to Sunday.
It's bunched all together.
And the Thursday thing is only 3 minutes long, as we start with Wacky TV Na Na Na. Episode 15. Hello, have we got a Copcraft to talk about? Somebody watched Copcraft, did they? When did that air?
That's on Sundays, is it?
I think you might be right.
I want to say Sundays.
Okay.
Wait, am I the only one who watched Copcraft?
I watched it as well, I didn't know if anybody else was going to, so.
I just said, police procedural, it seems like my jam, I'll give it another few shots and see how it goes.
Let me refer to this document here. Which has the times based on our time zone. And it airs on Monday. So indeed, we'll start with Copcraft.
Okay. What was that? Dragnet Mirage. Getting back in from our action cliffhanger from last week. We're in the middle of a firefight against a possessed weirdo with a submachine gun in an apartment.
He's trying to hold her down and, you know, shoot the guy. And he's hitting him all right, but it's not really working, and she's trying to run out and take him down because, dude, it's a zombie. Bullets ain't going to do it.
Yeah. Very much chase him down to fire escape onto the street and out in the open. Tilarna makes quick work of him. And this immediately gets a God damn it, Tilarna. I don't know how you do this shit in Middle Earth, but why couldn't you have just held him for questioning? Now you haven't got nobody to interrogate.
And she's just like, yeah, he smells of magic, or like she can smell magic. That's a thing. I guess it helps to be a magic detective if you can smell it. Yeah, like I don't know, like putting the powder on your tongue is like, yeah, it's pure evil wizard magic.
So they follow that and they investigate the other possessed dudes that they've encountered in the last couple of days, and go down to the morgue. And sure enough, the phones, and this is somebody who's got a smell of magic on them. So what would cause that? Well, these guys are probably heavy users of fairy powder, so it wouldn't be out of the ordinary to be sensing that around them, but this seems different.
It really annoys me that, like, they have, it's like, they call fairies a different thing, they have their own language and everything. I'm fine with that, but literally it's called, like, fairy dust is the drug they're using.
Street name for it.
Yeah, but I mean, like, they're fairies, the guys who are from that world are elves. Can we just call them by the thing, or are those all slurs or something? I'm not entirely sure.
Mm.
It's a weird one. And also, this is the episode that confirms that this is definitely at least an American principality of some fucking kind, yeah.
Yeah, there is, like, American flags.
In the partner's funeral.
Scene later on.
Yeah.
Also, the mortician there.
Yes.
A case being like a bit of a boor, and Tanara saying, oh, I don't know why I'm partnered with you. Is anybody like you at all? And then awkward, like, well, I used to like him because I happened to be, I'm his ex-wife or whoever it was.
His ex, anyway, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, the hard-bitten cop with the ex-wife, what she thought I was on his back, I suppose.
I mean, like, she seemed to be like, you know, call me if you need anything. So I assume he left her because he's, as we find out later, he's such a kind-hearted man.
Yeah. Then when I get too, can't begin too close. Anyway, so Clara has been kicked out of her hotel because she refuses to check her store at the door, so she's going to stay over at Kay's place.
Him out of sympathy picks her up in his mini.
Yeah.
But she's initially confused that he's wearing a mask because he's like, I have cat allergies. And it's like, why do you have a cat then? And he's like, well, he nearly run over it on like a drug bust a few months back, but no one else in the department wanted to take it, so he wasn't going to put it out in the street.
Yeah.
And she's been mocking his name the entire time because his name is like their word for cat or something like that. So yeah, she was basically calling him little kitten or something.
Mm-hmm. He's like, goes on like,
oh yeah,
he goes on Go Translate later on. And it's like, that little pecker.
I wasn't getting the pun, but she was just getting my name slightly wrong in order to mock me.
Yeah. Meanwhile, on the roof of a multi-story car park, there's a drug deal going down. And Mr. Kareem has brought half a million or a million large in exchange for the components for a weapon being sold by a dude. He's one of the elves. He's got some like kind of a gang running here, and they've demonstrated that we can have our wizard friend here. Once this team can kind of animate a body and make it do what we want.
If you take enough fairy dust and you're not pure of heart, then he can control you. But check it out, we made this new bomb that can just explode and kill you and also infect you enough whether or not you're pure of heart. Who fucking cares?
Yeah, there's like fairy dust inside the charge, so while it explodes, it also disperses it over a wide radius so they could like zombify an entire city if they wanted to.
Yeah, yeah. And your man, obviously a terrorist, going like, wait, how many people can you do? And it's like, I don't know, like 1,000 or something. I've only ever done like 100, says the wizard who's making... They called the cops there to bust their drug deal, but like to kill them, because it's like, well, the cops are probably good and pure of heart. I don't know, but not a great test subject. But anyway, yeah, to make them dance around and murder each other and that whatnot.
Yeah.
But, seems very interested in this thing, and this is the kind of thing I was hoping for, of like the combination of tech and magic stuff, because your one's confused by the cops that have been killed, because he has her smell the corpses of the cops who died, and she's like, that's weird, they definitely smell the magic, but these guys were cops, like, and the only thing that would have emphasized the spell was if they were wearing gold jewelry or something.
Yeah,
and so there might be like some technological aspect to it. Yeah,
yeah. What you saying? No, it's very hard to make this kind of jewelry, and even nobody in a magic world can do it. Like, even a master craftsman can't. Well, maybe not there, thinks Kay, but if we had like some high precision machinery, like automatic computerized cutting tools, like for manufacturing small medical devices like that. And sure enough, just like a quick internet search later, not many guys in the market for that these days, but I saw who was buying through a shell company and found this dude. We have a Mr. Banaji, or I don't know that. He's like a elf dude established here. He's a legitimate businessman. He's got to be running something on the side. And Talarna is like, well, let's just go and get his ass. But no, you can't do it. We got nothing on the dude. You know, we got to do this like slowly and carefully. We can't have any kind of bust-ups here, especially with something sensitive like this.
And say, no, if we don't get in now, they'll grind up that fairy. I'm trying to get to dust and drugs.
And he's going like, so this case is personal for you as well. It's like, well, how do you feel, man? I don't know, if that was someone you knew, wouldn't you want to rush in there and serve him as well? I suppose I would. Well, that's just how I feel about it, man. I'm going to go to the bathroom. Okay, don't run off nowhere. But she's, sure enough, she goes to the bathroom. She's been gone for a little while, and she's just gone out the back alley, vanished. Which is unusual, because she also left her sword behind, which is supposedly the thing that's most important to her, like represents her pride.
She got kicked out of the hotel for her, so yeah.
Yeah, so she's like, ooh, what's happened while I'm there? Yeah, left a little cliffhanger again. Yeah, but like in this one, we're seeing a lot more of the rapport building between the two. It comes clear for Talarna, that Kay is, he's actually quite a sensitive and kind guy, despite his exterior, which is, when she comes home and sees it, but the cat, and the link she's going to keep the cat in spite of himself, and that's sort of what the same, empathy he's trying to display towards her.
Yeah.
I was kind of wondering as well, sorry if this hurt your pride or whatever. But she's like, no, I'm fine with this. Actually, thank you very much. She's giving away a bit of herself as well. And then after the funeral, when they're going home, she's saying, well, I think in my religion, guys who are more in my lot, people at the funeral usually go to a very nice place where it's always spring and always nice. And I'm sure Detective Rick Fury, we didn't mention his name last week, is resting in peace there. It's like, you try to make me feel better? Well, if I am, is that a bad thing? No, actually, it's not. It's bad. And what do you say at times like this, Kay? Os Elvish, whatever it is. Thank you. That's right. Thank you very much. You're welcome.
Yeah, because at the start of this episode,
they have a manners.
she has a sword to his neck and he has the gun to her head, where it's like, oh, you must be on the take, you know, but then they're kind of warming up to each other now. It's doing the tropes, it's doing the procedural stuff, but it's doing it pretty okay. So yeah, still enjoying it.
I'm a sucker for that kind of thing.
Yeah,
But this is actually pretty fairly decently put together as well. So it's going along with that playbook, but the manner of doing it is very engaging as well. So yeah, you want to stick around with it.
There we got Wacky TV Na Na Na, episode 15. Which is called Glorious, the Kunoichi Dances. In which it turns out that our heroes are the Three Musketeers of Legend.
The Bananda Tree Braves. Just like the Jews in the scroll, see?
And they're supposed to assist our Kunoichi, who informs them that she is available, in assassinating the mechanical shogun.
Who oppresses the mole people underground. Yes.
Yes. And these three banana men are the legendary heroes who are going to save us all.
Yes.
You find us all so far.
The guy who operates the boom mic says, I couldn't kill him. The only person I could kill is the director. Which gets the director just... a sudden hard turn and mouth open.
Yeah, his sort of slow turn of his head, going like, dude.
And then just carry on the rest of the conversation as if not that didn't mention at all. I was just, yeah.
Dear.
But before they go in, the Kunoichi, she tries to get them to engage in some some aerobics to get themselves.
You got to warm up. You don't want to pull a hammy.
Exactly, yes.
But they're all too embarrassed. It's like, no. And they're kind of... what was the thing they say? It's too embarrassing. It's horrible to look at from the front and the back.
Yes.
You're talking about her leotard, yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if the actress is actually dancing in front... Or I assume she's also a comedian, the same
Well,
as
they
the
are breaking
people.
And she's yeah. breaking, so it yeah. feels like that... Yeah.
I like when they do that, though, still. Especially in shorts like this. It's just like, do not try to conceal that, you know, the trial player is like deadly serious with the jokes. And one day, no. Fucking just flying up that seat for a pants here. Being
yeah, fast. Yeah. Half the joke is the performance that they're just enjoying doing.
I also don't reckon her deadly shinobi blade is it's like a regular kitchen knife. It's got a little plastic handle.
It's got like the holes in it. It slices. It dices. You know, it's one of the really sharp ones.
cut spring onions and throats with equal ease.
Yeah, I assume business fish must be full of this sort of stuff as well. But alas, no access to business fish.
It's brave. The world is not ready for it.
I know. Yeah, I don't know if it's on Amazon in Japan, but it's definitely not on Amazon here, because I did look it up, because I was like, oh, is Business Fish going to be here? No such luck. Next up, we've got... I didn't watch this either. Machikado Mazoku, the demon girl next door. Oh. Episode 2, just how sporty are you? Everything is fluctuating.
Wait, am I the only one to watch this?
I think you might be.
Looks like it.
Okay, I'll go through quick. I thought I'd give it another shot. I enjoyed last week's one. It continues on her talking about her great battle with the magical girl in the last episode. And your friend's kind of like, yeah, you kind of lost that one, though. I think she said if it was soccer, you would have lost like 7-1. And she's just tearing up. It's like, you think I scored one? So yeah, her rival keeps hanging out with her and trying to get her into training to the point where it's like, okay, I challenge you to fight at the end of the day. And didn't you say you were going to train for the next fight? It's like, I challenge you to fight this weekend. So she meets up with her on Sunday, where she realizes your one was waiting for her all day Saturday outside, and that's why she has a tan now, because your one didn't specify which day. She was like, I suppose I better hang around all day. And then they go for a 3-mile run to warm up. But after the run, your one has forgotten why she was running and has to borrow a train fare to get home, because now she's 3 miles away from home and tired after running 3 miles. So when she, like, when she gets back home the next day, the mother goes like, right, your allowance is generally like, what is it, like 120 yen a month or something like that. So I'm upping it so you can use your allowance to defeat the magical girl to 500 yen a month. Fucking big increase, but still not much, not much money. But she's thinking of all the things she could do with this. Her friends are trying to convince her to buy sweets. She's an easy fucking sell on this, where she's like, I could use the sweets to increase my energy levels, or I could make a trail of Smarties and lead her to an angry dog. And she's stuck on the sweets thing. So, yeah, they're heading out to the, they're going shopping to find weapons to beat up the magical girl, who has come with them and is making suggestions as well. They end up, like, just tired from all the shopping, and they buy some ramen for, like, most of her allowance. But she's convinced, that, again, by her friends, that the carbs is what she needs to get stronger. You know, you got a carb load to... And then she, like, initially she's kind of like, oh, I've been tricked by the magical girl into spending all my allowance for destroying her into spending it all on food, but... She realizes what a good time she's having with her friends, and it's kind of nice because she doesn't get to hang out so much with her friends because they go to different clubs and that kind of thing. But it's nice to make this kind of time. It's good personal growth rather than the growth she needs to kill the magical girl and get all her blood. So, yeah, she kind of decides on a whim to get herself a Coke out of the Coke machine and goes like, no, 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 it's cool. It's cool that I'm spending this because this is a positive way to spend this money. And then she realizes there was a drinking fountain around the corner. So she could have got the drink for nothing. Oh, well, fuck it. That's most of the episode. Just a lot of jokes, a lot of the girls being cute, a lot of her being just super dozy. Yeah, your one seems, she says she's not like, even though she saved the world, it was because of her powerful friends. She considers herself not one of the more powerful magical girls of the region or something. So I presume there's more characters coming down the line.
Yeah, no need to be modest.
Well, no, she's just honest. She's kind of dumb with the whole magical girl thing is the other thing. I think, like, if you asked for her blood, she'd probably give it to you. She seems nice enough. Also, she just likes to hang out with this girl. She thinks of her as a good friend at this stage. It's good.
I'm sure if you asked for their blood, they'd probably give it to you as a line in another anime somewhere.
I thought that was just a turn of phrase, isn't it?
Oh, I think it is, but I'm sure I've seen it in...
it sounds like something they would say in Fruits Basket about Toru.
Yeah,
honestly.
Yeah, yeah. It's the more extreme shirt off your back version is the way I've heard it. Anyway, yeah.
Next up is Dr. Stone episode three, Weapons of Science, in which we get the clash of philosophies, and also the clash of Except there's no actual physical clash. The only person, there's like one hit happens in the entire thing. And also a crossbow gets shot. There. Can you tell it's really hot? I can't speak anymore. Fired, yes. Okay. I'm trying to remember everybody's names now.
But Senku and...
Taiju.
Taiju.
World strongest primate high schooler who intends to kill all adults.
I gotta be honest with you, I'm kind of a little on his side.
Well, that's the point Senku makes, is that he's a good guy and a murderer.
Yeah, despite the fact that I would be first on the chop, like, I get that. Well, maybe not first, but I'd be up for the chop anyway. I kind of get it. I was like, yeah, they did kind of fuck up the world. Can't deny it. Maybe it's like methodology rather than, like, okay, we'll build a new world we'll wake specific people, build a new world, and then wake up the adults, that kind of way. I would have been more on board with that rather than just straight up murdering people.
You're probably going to be on board with Senku's plan as it goes along.
Yeah, I figure we'll wake the people we need is mostly his plan.
Now, whether you'll be entirely on board with the personalities of some of the people he wakes up is another matter.
Oh, I mean, like, I assume it's going to be all a bunch of crazy weirdos, and I'm fine with that in theory for watching it, but living through it, probably not, no.
I did the best, what they do.
Even if they have to be emotionally manipulated by a character we haven't met yet.
Cool. Cool. But yeah, the basic thing in this is they have, it's like he has to keep the magic juice away from this guy, and then his dumb best friend goes like, "Hey, we got the magic juice from the cave. And he's like, shit. But then they pretend they don't have enough to revive your one.
Yeah.
So that he can go, your man can go to the cave to get some more. Because he insists on seeing this cave of wonders. And it's basically, they do have enough. They have enough to revive her. And then what's the plan? Either get the fuck out of here or we fight right now. Run or fight. Those are the two options I think he presents to them.
Mm. Then Tsukasa, he arrives back suddenly, and then we have to cast a stand our ground pretty much. Well, Taiju says you've got to stand our ground anyway.
He's got an interesting thing, and I did like your man pointing out. I was like, that's not a deal, bro.
Yeah, like when the time he takes to think it over, and goes, yeah, that doesn't work. Because his argument, basically Taiju thing is like, instead of killing all the adults, you could beat me up as much as you like. I think he thinks
I'll take as many hits as you can give.
Yeah, I think he feels like, oh, this guy is just overly angry for no reason, and therefore if I let me be the target of his anger, he won't take it out on the adults.
He's kind of missed the point.
We see just how smart Tsukasa is, because he figures out what the chemical is that's dripping from the cave as well.
Well, that, and after they try and cover their tracks, he instantly goes like, aha, they tried to cover their tracks as a ruse.
Yes, because Senku like convinces them that, okay, well, you're not going to kill us, because we're kids as well, so we'll just have to...
Yeah, they're not actively interfering with him, so it's not like they can stop him from wandering through the woods and punching people's heads off.
Yes, and so then they're going to make it look like they tricked him, which they did, because Senku pretends that Taiju is going to have to take 5 days to recover from falling from loss of blood. Was the blood from the blow or from the crossbow bolt clipping him?
I thought it was from the blow.
And what they're actually going to do is pack everything up and leg it, and in search of materials they can use to create weapons of science.
They're going to skip a couple of thousand years of technological development is the plan.
Yes.
Yeah, have a whole quiz. Like, one of the greatest things that manga's ever invented? You know, we give it like a leg up and everything else. Smartphones.
That's his answer every time.
No, not smartphones.
We'll get there eventually. That'll be the end of the series.
No.
When they all have smartphones.
Oh, No, Dwayne, spoiler alert. They make a smartphone incredibly soon.
Oh, fucking A. That's even better. Yes. I'm happy with that.
Using crystals and shit. It's like some kind of new age technology.
Yeah, that's why he keeps on saying it, is because there's a payoff quite... I imagine before... it might be like the very end of this season.
That'll be a good way to end the season, yeah. You know, I'm kind of fucking really happy with that, because I feel like the little end thing that amuses me every time it comes up is like, please do not fucking try this at home. It might be illegal if you try to do the things you see on this show. Like, it's not so much talking about making gunpowder. It's like, don't make a smartphone. There's all kinds of ramifications for that.
And especially don't make gunpowder, because the greatest thing man could ever made was guns. guns.
Yeah, I mean, like, I doubt he's going to have the, whatever it was, a fucking Glock or something like that in his hand. But, you know, they're on their way to making gunpowder.
Yeah, you've got to travel up towards Hakone, which is, like, a nice volcanic hot spring area, which means there's pretty plenty of sulfur there, which is the main component of black powder, which we're going to make.
Yeah. So they figure
the way they can find their way. Yeah,
they figure they're going in the right direction, because they find the Kamakura Great Buddha.
It was your one who found that. She's been revived, obviously.
Yes, Yuzu Ria.
So I'm what was it? She was in like the craft club or something like that. So I'm guessing that's going to come into play as well.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. That's good. And obviously she has some knowledge of geography, that she knew where this thing would be, and it would be good point to direct yourself as to where you're going.
Yes, but
also
like...
it's a good source of copper. Yeah.
Yes, he's like, it survived thousands of years. That really shows you what a great god he is. And then he pauses and, well, a great Buddha he is. Whatever.
Sacrilege. Yeah.
And but then Senku like destroys all his notions of there being some sort of greater power in the universe by explaining everything that Taiju sees as a sign of divinity.
Yeah, like the fact that no grass or trees grew around it is like, yeah, because the copper is leaking into the soil and it's highly toxic to plants. And it, copper doesn't degrade besides just weathering. And that will just be a great source for him to make a better sextant. Because he's got a wooden sextant at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, he says, oh, it's pretty good. It's a piece of shit, though, I hate it.
They'll have a smartphone soon enough, so I guess that's not going to be a problem.
Yeah, so they arrive on like on geopositioning systems like been before that, and just trying to incorporate it all into one handy device.
They get found hot springs, and they're gonna make gunpowder.
Yeah, because the as we learned in freaking
Drifters.
Drifters, yeah, you gotta have sulfur.
And meanwhile, Tsukasa has figured out that they're trying to lead him astray.
Yeah, like, and they're traveling north, which he knows is towards hospital area. Well, that's what's there. Sulfur, all going to try to make gunpowder, but they can't overpower me. They're going to make a gun and shoot me. That's how they're going to. If they do that, I'm done. So I got to get there before they figure it out.
Like the fact he is aware of some limitations, because they do mention it's like that arrow was going at him like at 200 miles an hour, and he like grabbed it and threw it out of the air, kind of thing. But it's like, but he can't dodge a bullet.
But I can't remember what it is they're going to use the gunpowder for. The other important thing to note from this episode, because I thought it was even better foreshadowed than it was in the comic, is that I forget her name because she's barely in the comic. Yuzuriya. Her foot, she wasn't fully de-stoned, and so they put...
Oh, her toe was, like, still...
Yes.
Yeah, they had to apply some more to her.
And they kind of explain how the crack, why they've still got cracks in their faces. But the other key thing is, while this is... Because it happens, like, two or three times, but when he's doing that explanation, is Senku's cracking his neck. That's all I'll say. They definitely wanted you to notice that he's cracking his neck and that he was saying that during that explanation.
Okay.
Because I think with having actual sound effects, because I think sometimes when you're reading a comic, you look at the shape of a sound effect, maybe, and, gloss over when it is actually giving you some important information in this case.
Yeah, I guess sound effects don't tend to have plot relevance for the most part.
Where you're actually watching an anime form, it's like, oh yeah, I heard that. And it also helps I know where it's going, but... It's like, oh, that's a great bit of foreshadowing. Well done, Dr. Stone. There was a few spots where it felt like they were struggling a little to keep them on model, but in general, still a cracking show, three episodes in.
Yeah.
Next on the list is Fruits Basket, episode 16. She said, "Don't step on them." I didn't know there was an ant in the zodiac.
No, it's the school workbooks, which gets discarded in the hallway. Tora's got to pick them up, and it's when she first meets Uo Chang. We're getting her backstory here. She's a reformed delinquent, but she wasn't always this way. We'll travel back some years since when I first met Toru, and she put me on the patch. As she put it, she saved my life, man.
The lead into it where Toru's still wearing her her school swimsuit, whereas everyone else has their bikinis or their one pieces. Everyone has their own personalized stuff, but she can't afford her own swimsuit. She probably can't justify the expense to herself. I think is the problem.
Yeah.
So if we all chip in, we'll say it's a gift to her for just being so nice to us all the time. Yeah. And she gets the guys in on it, and they have to go clothes shopping for a swimsuit with the girl that they like, and it's super awkward.
Plus, it was more fun. What she does for all of you feckers in this house, like, I think the least you can do is stump up for getting some new clothes, huh?
Yeah, but like the thing, they're in the, like the girls section, and Uwa's kind of shouting at them, "Hey guys, what color bikini do you like?" And they're just like, "I don't know. Ask me that shit, man."
Orange. Orange. Orange is your favorite color. It's a nice color, all right. Shut up.
Yeah, they're being their dumb selves. In the meantime, Uwa's been followed around by some delinquent girls who are looking for a legendary biker girl, I guess.
They're former like a gang member, gang comrades. Like, when no one gets out of the gang, we're going to shadow her. And when we get her, like, off her guard, we'll take her out. But
they're too distracted by hot boys. Yeah,
let's wait until those boys come closer. Maybe we'll start talking to them.
Yeah, when she's giving out some of the story of her her first meeting Toru, it's at a restaurant, and the girls are there as well, but they're like too busy taking pictures of the hot boys to to actually interfere at this stage in the story.
Yes, after this, we'll definitely like take her out back and cut her, right? Yeah, definitely.
Totally. but yeah, it kind of cuts back to her thing where she was told of the legendary, what was it, Crimson Butterfly or something?
Legendary bike gang leader. She wasn't even like a Sukebang gang leader. She rode like headed like a proper Bosozoku bike motorcycle gang.
She ran her own shit.
The co-ed biker gang. But you know, she had heard that she like, you know, sort of gone straight or left it all behind her, and she's living somewhere in the neighborhood. Like I think like a daughter about her age, it goes to your school, I think. Maybe you've seen her. Oh, wow.
Yeah, apparently she got married, changed her name to Honda and thing. I think she goes to your school, and it's like, oh, I'm going to have to keep an eye over this. And she has a picture of, you know, a bike gang girl with the wrap on the thing and the wooden sword on her shoulder, that kind of thing. It's like, I would have noticed someone like that. And she runs into, well, Toru runs into her because, you know, she's dozy.
Drops the books, and then people are walking them in the hallway, and then it was like, hey, don't step on those books, you bastards. Come on, nerd, I'll let you pick those up. Oh, thank you very much. I'm so sorry. Pleased to meet you. I'm Toru Honda. Toru Honda. Is your mother Kyoko Honda? Yes. As a matter of fact, it is, actually.
That was her name when she was still active, that kind of thing. And it was just like, oh, shit.
Oh, no. Toru's a nerd.
Toru takes her home to meet her mother because she figures, oh, she'll like that. But she's disgusted by this.
She's this lovey-dovey mom. Oh, she's a total square, man.
And the only thing Toru's mom says to that when she kind of storms out, saying, it's like, fucking, you just disappointed me and disillusioned me and shit. And she's just like, I just learned to calm down a little.
Just relax a little, man.
Yeah, relaxed.
Just forget this. And then, whoa, she just throws herself even more fiercely into all the gangs, getting into fights and robbing stuff and raising all kinds of hell. But
and it gives context to the opening scene that it had, because you see a girl kind of come in, she sees someone sitting down watching TV and just kind of slumps into her room. But that's her at the end of this story where she's talking, and she like has her voice over this time to give it context. That's her dad, and when her mom died, her dad just kind of took to drinking, doesn't really do much around the house.
Yeah.
So that's obviously how she fell into this thing. But now she's been disillusioned with this because her hero biker turns out to be just someone's mom. Just like, that's not cool.
No. I think it's more so that, oh, she's pissed off because look at this fun, this biker. She grew up and she had a family. She has like a lovely household, a very kind daughter. And I thought like there was nothing, there's no kind of life for me. Like, you know, I can't see anything like that ahead of me. And it's more like, it's not that she's angry, that she's probably maybe angry at her idol, maybe isn't what she envisioned it as well, that someone like her would have a life like that and I'm living like this, and she's just more envious and sad about her own situation.
Yeah. It kind of cuts it there, and we're going to get the rest of the story next week. But I think it's a combination of things, like you said. Be interesting to see. And it's kind of nice to get some of the other characters to get their background and to get their tragedy and their story.
Yeah, like Uocha, she's like my favorite character, I think, in this. I kind of like her. She's willing to kind of like delve into and kind of disclose some of these probably fairly messy details of her own past. And because she's pretty cool and level-headed.
She's got it together now for the most part. I mean, like the kind of jokes in this one are like, oh, remember when I used to be crazy and in a bike gang and like all about being cool and shit like that, and her friend's kind of like, dude, you're still like that. And it's like, oh yeah, I guess I am. She doesn't do the gang stuff as more, but other than that, the entire lifestyle, the wearing the long skirt thing, yeah, she's still very much is that.
Yeah.
She's as changed, well, but she's in a more comfortable position, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. As well as showing that the Soma family, they haven't got a lock on all of the tragic history in this town, at least. And just seeing, well, you can't be feeling sorry for yourself your entire life. You've got to try and come up out of it. And maybe she'll be able to convey that to them when she gives the latter half of her story next time.
Yeah, I figure it'll be the case of this is what Toru can do for you if you like let her into your life and open yourself up to her, that kind of thing. She's a good person that makes you better by knowing her.
Yeah.
And then the kind of coda at the end of it is those three delinquent girls trying to come up with a cool line to instigate a fight.
Remember, you gotta have a good one-liner. If you mess it up, you'll be embarrassed forever.
I like the fact they only came up with a good one when they started arguing with each other, and the third one's like, no, that's good there. And they kind of just stop fighting immediately, and they try that one-liner, just shouting it at the air. And they try to threaten the next person comes along, but would you know, it's a cute foreign child who speaks only German. He invites them for hamburgers, I think.
Hamburger.
Yeah, I cut that bit, but I like just on a quick translate, it seemed to be like he's asking them out, I think, or something like that. So good on him.
Now, is that hamburgers or the...
No, he said hamburger, you know.
Hamburger.
But,
yeah. But no, the whatever the thing is that gets referred to as hamburgers in Japan.
Well, I assume it's because he's German. He's saying hamburgers.
Hamburg steak.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's half Japanese and half German, so I don't know which kind of hamburger he's talking about.
It depends what day of the week it is.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Next up, it is Do You Love Your Mom and Her Two-Hit Multi-Target Attacks, Episode 2. It's just a coincidence they're all girls. Got that? Wipe that smirk off your face.
I will not.
No.
Oh, man, I think I might be done with this one.
Well, I didn't delve into it after the screenshot you shared with us last week.
I tripped and fell and accidentally watched it. I mean, the animation's much better. The animation's much better this week.
You know why it's better in this one.
No one crafted. Detailed.
Particularly in the second half of the episode. The animation really picks up. Yeah.
I mean, like, except for the white sensor bars. Yeah, it's much better.
Anyway, before we get to the white sensor bars, we have the interviews with Mum, where she dismisses the three party members in quick succession. One because
warrior woman because she's too tough and like gung ho.
Well, it's even worse than that. It's like my hobby is dealing out twice the pain I receive after letting the enemy hit me as much as they want and overkilling them.
Maybe that's just how our power set works.
Yes, you know. Quite possibly. The next one's hobby is stealing.
Because, you got to have a thief on the party. And she's like, criminals, nope, I'm calling the police.
Yes. The next one is an elf priest, and the mum doesn't know what an elf is, so rejected.
And then a shopkeeper applies for the position?
Yes, porter, a test player. So, yeah, the other ones don't choose as a test player, so they may have been NPCs. They're both, mum and son are both fine, they're both in agreement that this non-combatant will be useful because they can store 300 items in their magic bag.
And they also get a discount on all the shops.
And they can craft and appraise items, so genuinely useful.
What was the character, I forget which Dragon Quest it was, but his job was shopkeeper, and he was actually pretty good. Fuck, I can't remember that one. It doesn't matter.
Yes, so son is completely fine, and then mum says, great, you can marry my son. And she's like, yes, I'll be your son's bride. And then the son's like, yes, I've got, no, party member, not a bride.
I forgot why they were having the interview with him.
And then they're going through
the CVs,
and they come to one who reminds him too much of Lena Inverse. Literally, they have a picture of Lena Inverse with her eyes blacked out.
Yeah, as if you couldn't fucking tell. It's like, oh, an angry mage type with big explosions and shit. Yeah, we've seen this before, buddy.
But then the CV turns into the very person and she kidnaps him.
Yeah, after him trying to scrunch up the CV and step on it, it's just like she materializes, she transmogrified herself into her own CV. As an impressive display of power, I guess?
Yes, and in return she wants to step on his face because he was treading on her face as ACV.
Hmm. She teleports him out of town, steps on his face, and then they actually have the interview. Bit of a sit-down, bit of
an exposition of what actually is going on here.
Hmm.
Which is to say, we learn what the ridiculously long initials stood for.
It is massively multiplayer online, but like massively mom oriented.
I'm trying to
something.
Find the screenshot I took so I can tell you exactly what it is.
Because it's a lot of M's and some of them don't quite work as well in a way that's fun.
But the gist of it is you enter this game with your mom and you're supposed to make up with her. And then that's the only way of completing the game is to.
You grow closer with your mom, yes. and that's the win condition, I guess.
Yes, and so she was in here with her mom, but they had a massive row, and she's run off.
So she's stuck in the game.
She's stuck in the game, and she's, well, presumably her mom's also somewhere stuck in the game.
So she assumes if she can get this other mother to, like, adopt her, then it's like, well, all I need to do is grow close to her then, and then I'll be a little out of the game.
Yeah, it's mom's massively maternal multiplayer making up with offspring role playing game. Is what it
is. That's it.
Meanwhile, mom's worried where son is. So, but then she realizes, she's worried that something bad will happen in that he'll become a friend with a girl and never see his mother again.
Oh, what a terrible condition.
And that's drawn in, like, a very 1970s Osamu Dezaki way, her imagining of what's going to happen.
Reference to an older thing that she probably would have watched.
Yes.
Yeah. What's the informer one's name again? I can't remember.
Shirase.
And she
comes to the idea of, like, hey, Mother Earth is also a mother, and I've got this sword, which...
Speaks to the Earth?
Yes, does Earth elemental attacks, so therefore I'll use this to detect where my son is. Which she does. It's by sending the pair of them flying into the air once Mother Earth has found.
Like a massive pillar of Earth pushes them like well into the sky, and they can see it from all the way in town. They're like, oh, there he is. And she levels up and gains the ability to find out where her son is at any time, I assume by flinging him into the fucking air, but it works.
It allows you to find your son or daughter and immediately interrupt whatever it is she or he's gotten himself into, regardless of what they are doing.
Oh no, Ryu tried spending an awfully long time in the bathroom. Oh, it faded.
Oh god, I hadn't considered that use for it. Okay.
Yeah, they've then jailed the sage for attempted player killing, but then they let her join the party. But they explain, no, you can't. I can't be your mother, but you can join the party.
He's gotten off with, like, attacking other players from stepping on her, because when he stepped on her, she was a CV.
Yes, so that was fine.
That's technically legal. You're allowed to step on paper.
I should point out, all throughout the conversation they were having, there was gratuitous panty shots of...
Oh my god, so many, and so many of him kind of, like, looking up her skirt and shit. Like, not lewdly, just kind of, like, side eyes, like, I can see your knickers right now. And I was just like, that was nearly worse than the later stuff.
It was worse than the later stuff, because the later stuff was played for laughs.
I feel like the later stuff might be worse without those white bars. I feel like that's true. Anymore.
But at the same time,
it
is played...
That's what makes it potentially worse. But yeah, the panty shots are worse.
It's played as a joke, whereas the panty shots aren't played as a joke.
No, that's the they're played as creeping.
Yes. So they fall down, they go down in a hole, and no one's got anything which could light up. But...
Well, they're going into a dungeon to make some money, isn't it?
Mum tries to cheer them up by saying, hip hip hooray, which then unlocks Mum's light, Mother's light. She's got another special skill.
She's just power leveling through somehow, yeah.
Yeah, and then the sage character says, come to think of it, my mum used to glow sometimes too. See, that's the thing. The dialogue is pretty funny. There's lots of...
Yeah.
It's just the matter of fact way. Anyway, they fight a slime, and you can probably guess where it's going when they fight a slime.
Well, they fight one slime, takes them all out. They fight a bunch of slime that combine to make one super slime, and for some reason, it's only dissolving the fucking mother's claws. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then slimy shenanigans and falling down over and over. You know.
Yes.
You've seen this. You know how it goes.
And The mum's embarrassed because she wore a thong today.
I don't mind, like, if they'd not played up the titillation of it, they would have been fine of your man just reacting. He's like, I didn't need to fucking hear this.
Well, yes, it's the slipping over on top of your son bit is the is the bit which they censored, because everything else is covered up regardless. And the bit where she's won and then starts leaping around and embarrassing her son, that's all covered up with hands and hair, so.
That bit seems more for comedy rather than the slipping stuff. Yeah,
it is literally just that one screenshotting scene, which is done for salacious means.
Yep.
To get you to buy the Blu-ray. Then they unlock inside the slime, amongst all the gems that it's turned into, there was a coffin which had another Shirase in, this time a nun one. The mysterious nun Shirase offers them a special quest for rescuing her, which reminded me of all things of Miss Rabbit and Peppa Pig, of like the way that every job is occupied by the same character. And so they got a bunch of money now, so they go off shopping, and of course, Mom wants to buy bargains rather than actual useful equipment.
Isn't there a quest they have to like go to Momania or something like that?
Something like that, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Care
and the fact that she gives a look to the sage character, I've forgotten her name, but I figure it's like her mum has carved out a kingdom for herself.
Could be, yes. Head to a small farming village west of the kingdom of Mammalia, the village of Mammon.
That's it, yeah.
So I assume everything is going to be named after mothers in this.
Just to remind you to get on with your mam.
Yes. I did like the fact she's looking at a stall full of eggs and it's being run by a chicken man, which does beg the question of where these eggs came from.
Yeah, I've seen that joke before where it's like, is it Taurens in World of Warcraft? It's like, don't buy milk off them, that kind of way.
They're also doing the thing where...
Sorry, police, I didn't think the joke was that bad.
Like, there's a bunch of people who are just like drawn as like white outline type people.
Or yeah, the non-NPC
emoji faces
thing.
they've got.
Mm. As an excuse to not draw background characters, that's pretty fun.
Yeah. That's the episode, yeah. So, one scene which will make you uncomfortable, unless that's what you're into, in which case it'll make you very comfortable indeed.
Well, yeah. I think in context of watching it like on this, yeah, the panties one was way worse, because that's clearly, you're in on it too, you're being just as lewd. And yeah. I was just like, fuck you, show. The other one later on, I was like, I know this is filthier than what they're showing, because they've literally covered up the parts that are filthier.
Yes.
Which, like, both made me annoyed, but I guess, yeah, the panty one is worse for actually watching. Although, I wouldn't want to fucking someone to walk in on that scene with me watching either, you know? Neither's good.
Mm. Kind of program you watch with your back to a wall.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, that was that. I'm sure there's worse things currently airing.
Oh, I have no doubt, yeah.
Well, that other Fireman show. But that's not streaming anywhere. Next up is Hakata Mentai Pirikaraku-chan, Episode 3. Fierce Ramen War. That was last week's episode. What was this?
I forgot to put it up. Episode 4. Ah, shit, I forgot. No.
You got the episode number right, I think.
Oh, did I? Okay.
Just not the title.
That would be Uncle Matsunabe's Love.
That's him, yes. Uncle Matsunabe has fallen in love.
And is this that guy with the food on his head?
He is the guy with...
I realise that's not helping in a show like this, but yeah.
Yeah, the guy with the big pot on his head with food in it.
Mm.
And he's fallen in love with a woman with a big pot on her head with food in it. But she's got a different type of food on her head, and he doesn't think he lives up to that sort of food. And so he wants... So Pirikaraku-chan volunteers to go and ask her what sort of men she's interested in. And it turns out, while she's doing this, the person, her assistant in the shop, basically puts it together that, oh, the sort of man she'd be into is me. And so he beats Uncle Matsunabe to the punch in suggesting they go out. That's pretty much the episode.
That's rough.
Heartbreaking.
Masanabe is a type of nabe mono in Japanese cuisine, which is made from beef or pork tripe or other offal.
Oh, that's why he didn't consider himself fancy enough then. You're right, right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know. I can't remember what her name was, because I'm sure that is a similar dish.
Like from the off-cuttings of some other animal. Yeah.
Hang on. What's her name? Takiko-san. I guess she'd also be one of these nabe monos. Okay, this is research I should have done before the podcast rather than during it. Anyway, that was the episode.
Making me hungry.
It carried on looking as nice as it is. I suspect more familiarity with Japanese cuisine might make it funnier. There you go. Next on the list is Vinland Saga Episode 3, Troll, in which we go to war, but we never get there.
Well, that's the plan. Shh, don't tell anyone.
Hey, ask lad, I'm going to pay you like this much money to go and kill this dude for me. Oh, yeah? What's in it for you?
Yeah. I want you to pay me the same again up front. And also,
well, yeah, it's the fact that he asked him, is like, dude, you have a whole fucking trained army. You could easily take out this dude. But obviously you don't want to do it, so...
Also, obviously, this isn't above board, is it?
I'll get my mate to accidentally kill the guy you've got hiding behind that banner, ready to threaten me.
Because these lads are all getting drunk outside, they've killed that fucking Catholic monk or whatever. One of his lads throws a spear and is like, oh, sorry, boss, I didn't hit you there, did I? And your man's like, oh, you motherfucker, you nearly took my head off. What a bunch of wacky guys, huh?
Just a little nod.
And obviously his assassin soldier, or his soldier put in a position to do an assassination, has been stabbed, so he cannot be blamed for it, because that guy was hidden behind the tarp.
Didn't know he was there. There could be anybody's bodyguard.
Yes. Yeah, it's one of those, I know that you know, but I can't do anything about it, because that would give away that I was planning on doing something untoward myself.
Yeah, I mean, like, much like the Dr. Stone thing, I know that they were trying to trick me, and this means such and such a thing. Like, I see that a lot lately, but I like this as I know that you know that I know, but I also killed your guy, so fuck you. It's like an extra level.
Yeah, I think, are they already at the Faroe Islands at this point?
Yeah, that's where I figured.
Yes, I assume they're just killing whoever the monk, whatever Christians there were, already there. I get the feeling from watching, reading around and reading other stuff, is like these guys are throwbacks, almost. It's like a lot, by this time, a lot of this, like, anti-Christian stuff had, was not really going on so much in Danelaw.
Unless it was like a different thing in like the army where...
Well, these guys are just mercenaries, aren't they? They're just...
They're probably not too gone on the whole Christian love your brother and stuff when what you do for a living is killing.
Yeah, and like our religion says that we're like fighting and killing is actually a great deed, a great thank you to the gods above. So we'll do what they say, because religion says there's no law against it.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, everyone's setting off. I like that, like, there's a queue of people to say goodbye to the daughter. As if they're
and
all...
She's just like, I just want to go back to bed, man.
all the guys coming in like, hey Hans, where are you going? I'm just going to say goodbye to her. Why you want to say goodbye to her? Oh, never you mind.
Yeah, and I do like the joke on the boat of, like, them all on one side and then Thor on the other side with a massive oar.
With one giant oar. Like, I'll do all the rowing on this side. Because they're all, like, he's only taking five of the kids, or the teenagers, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's like, that's hard, that's barely enough to run the boat. And it's like, don't worry, he's rowing the left of the boat. Or I don't know which way the boat faces. I assume the way you're going. On the right of the boat, whatever, it doesn't matter. He's got a comically large oar.
And they're sailing. They're going to sail with Leif Erikson's trading ship.
As he explains to the girl who's trying to confess to one of the guys that it's like, hey, you come back safe, okay? He's like, don't tell anyone, they're not going to war. He's like, what? Yeah, he's going to drop them off here, pick up a bunch of lads, and I can only take 5 lads on my boat. That's why I only took 5. So it's all good. He's just taking the warship and the guys just basically to row it there.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Because they go the pretense. The, what takes them to the Faroe Islands is the idea that we'll stop off here and
get some supplies.
Yeah.
It's a good midway point.
So. Yeah, but as they're on their way though, we discover that inside a barrel is Thorfinn. He goes busting for a piss.
I did like it. It's like, does that mean we're too late to go back? Why, yes, Thorfinn. Thorfinn. yeah, because I mean, like, as soon as you see, he's like, his dad can't find the kid, and it's like, oh, I never apologized to the son, and he's like saying to the mother, it's like, tell him, and it's like, you know, he can't bring himself to say anything emotional, stunted maleness and whatnot, and the mother's just like, yeah, I'll tell him, don't worry about it, and it's just like, he's in the fucking boat, he's in a box or under a blanket or in a barrel.
Well, we do get his war story that he basically tells them to discourage them from going to war. Which does not involve being at war at all. It involves him about to go to war.
And being, like, kind of a shitty parent.
Yes.
Basically. Yeah. Yeah. He was typical Viking man. What's this baby right here? Like, one, this is grabbing it up, like, so roughly. Would you mind? It's just been born.
Do you mind it? You gotta hold its neck. Its head's too big.
Somebody's gonna have a boy.
It's like, yeah, he gives it back to the missus, and he's like, next time make a guy, because the leader wants more guys. Yes. And she's insisting, he's like, name the kid. He's like, you fucking name it. And she's like, name the kid.
And then, like, I've never seen her get angry like that ever again. So, or even before that day. So,
yeah.
I knew I wasn't going to go out of the room without giving that child a name. And, like, that made her reconsider a lot of things after that.
Yeah, he thought of his own mother and gave her his daughter his mother's name. And he says, like, that was the start of it. That's when I started being, I think he said, afraid of war or something?
Yeah, afraid of battle, I think.
Afraid of battle, yeah.
No, like, he was, well, sure, he might fight and die and go to Valhalla, but people will be left behind that he cares about, and he's afraid of losing them. And it wasn't so much of that fear of battle, it's just like, I don't feel like this is worth it. I have something that I care about much more than conquest and battle right now that's waiting for me at home, and I want to, like, encourage and nurture that and grow with that instead of all of this.
Yeah, I think the point with Helga making him name the daughter was, like, to stop it from just being something abstract that wouldn't affect
like,
him.
I don't even want a daughter. Give me a son next time. It's like, no, this is yours. You fucking name it.
Like, this is, like, a named person. This is for real now. And the same way, like, they will see me or hear of me as their father, and if I'm not there, how would that make them feel? Indeed, how would I feel if I died somewhere away from them and I never got a chance to say I love you one last time or hold them or anything last time?
Yeah, his fear seems to be based on the people and interactions and caring about the things left behind, like you said, rather than just like a coward or that kind of way. It's a very different fear.
Mm.
But they get to the Faroe Islands, but then they notice something's up. Something that there's less buildings than there should be. And
they try and double back out of the fjord they're sailing up.
I do like the bit where Thorfinn thinks they're in England and they have to explain, no, we're not there yet. And then we get like the little Nog in the Nog style Viking map.
Mm.
It's like, this is basically where things are, but you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
And yeah, their way in and way out's blocked as Vikings hurl down furniture and stuff they've ripped out of the town to block their way. And there's archers got them surrounded. And then we get the longboat with, what's his name, Askalad.
Yeah. I did like the way the drums are used in this, because obviously you got the drum beat for the rowing initially when they're rowing out of dock. You got the drum beat when they're kind of pulling into this in between the cliffs, and when it suddenly stops, it's like, okay, something's fucking up. And then the drum beat before you hear that before the other ships are coming, like it's used really well for tension.
And I do like that Bjorn's like, well, there's so few of them, we shouldn't just rush them, it wouldn't be fair. Because they kind of like, they want it to be a sporting fight. But then, as they're discussing what they should do, Thor just climbs onto their longboat and starts decking them.
Doing some kind of Viking karate.
It just sort of slaps them in the chops and just takes them out straight away. He's given his kid the knife, saying, like, I want to use it to defend yourself, because he's like, I'm about to jump onto the enemy ship. This is an incredibly bad idea. Trying to get the other kids to, the other teenagers, to not draw their weapons, because it's like, there's going to be very little odds of us getting out of this, but him going over there and slapping them in the chops is plan A, I guess.
Yeah, might as well just go over there and just, like, hit the biggest guy I can find. As well,
Establish dominance, yeah.
He knows these guys are Danes, they're mercenaries, no, they're full of pride, they're full of bravado and braggarism. So do you think it's like, oh, if I go and challenge them, like, this is our best shot at getting out of here. Become the alpha male.
That's where we leave it, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's on the boat. He's after slapping a few guys senseless. But that's where it's left, in a very precarious position.
Yeah. I'm now curious if there is a scene in Vicky the Viking with Vicky leaping out of a barrel, what with this doing that and One Piece doing that early on in their story.
I think that was a Pippi Longstocking thing, wasn't it? That like either her or her dad survived in a barrel. Like, I feel like it's been a trope since.
Oh yeah, well, I know, but
since then, or maybe older.
But like, specifically, yeah. both authors of those of these two comics have cited Vicky the Viking as being the inspiration.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Vicky the Viking, but it was much more brutal and historically accurate. I think it's going to look something like this.
I was like, oh, has anybody done an AMV of it yet with Horrible History songs? Because there's at least two Viking songs, and there's one which is specifically about this era, but probably can't do it yet till much later on in the series.
They don't have the footage yet. Okay.
Yeah. Well, once they get to some much more like gruesome battle scenes or AMV makers, that's a bit more footage to work.
The Horrible History song, literally, but that kind of refers to like sort of the 700s, 800s, rather than the 900s, early 1000s.
Let's be real, you're going to find like a lot more AMVs set to this with Scandinavian metal bands.
That is true. Yes, you get that. Unfortunately.
Oh, well, bide your time.
Well, or I'll do it myself.
Well, I mean, like, freaking with like them doing pretty well in the Eurovision and shit, I'm expecting to see at least one done to Hatari at this stage. I mean, they're Icelandic. Fucking, it's right there for you. Go for it.
Right, that's the Vinland saga, which, as I understand, it's a while before the Vinland part comes into play in the story.
Very long time.
They've set it up. They've
all put it.
Yeah.
It's probably Danelaw saga is probably more the accurate description. Then we've got BEM episode 2, Liar. I didn't watch this. Who watched this?
Ooh, I forgot about BEM.
Oh, okay. I'm the only one who watched BEM then. BEM. Right, this is more so on, god damn it, why can't I remember anyone's name? The girl BEM.
Bella,
thank you. It's kind of focused on her and her school life. There's a kid who keeps drawing in her class, and all her friends are being mean girls to him, where they're saying he's disgusting for drawing her. He's not drawing her in the nude. He's just, like, sketching her in class, that kind of way. But this gets into some of the stuff of, like, their human forms that they've taken, because she has taken the form of some human girl that died, I don't know, like, 10 years ago or something like that. And the reason like this is coming up now is because two things. One, a person who used to go to school with that girl and she disappeared under mysterious circumstances is kind of like going like, oh my god, it's that girl. You came back, and she's like, what? No, that's not me. And she's like, oh, you look just like her. That's so weird. And you're wearing the same charm that she did, and that kind of thing. So she robbed the body, I guess, as a monster to copy it. But anyway, the police have also found that dead girl's body and are currently investigating that crime. So it's kind of like a combination thing where Bella's trying to understand the person whose form she's taken a little better from the friend that she used to have when she was still alive. And the police also investigating the crime, like a combination thing. But I'm very distracted as to how exactly it goes down. There's like, oh, you think it's one character, but it's actually another and that kind of thing. But it's more so that there is a bowling-based assassin cyborg in the fucking episode. It's fucking good, dude. He's got a pompadour. He keeps making bowling jokes. And I was just like, wait a minute, this is just a standard assassin in this world. It's like, yeah, he's got a big bowling arm. He can summon bowling pins. I don't understand it, but it's fucking cool.
Sounds like a boss from No More Heroes or something.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. I could totally see that, with the big arm and everything. So she has a cool fight with him. And, like, she fucking, like, brutalizes that guy. But she's prevented from killing the real killer by Bem, because I guess that would be, like, giving in to your monstrous side. In the meantime, he's called your one, the cop. To arrest the real killer of the crime, and you can see her like in this, like or the other, the kid Bem is telling her, like, why are you having ice cream with your friends? It's like, why the fuck are you doing this shit? And she's like, I'm practicing for when I get human, actually. And he's like off going playing like House of the Dead in the arcade with his friends. So it's kind of like they are like playing roles, but there's a lot of her that seems to come through as human in this, like her. She's displaying emotions at some point, but it seems like she's genuinely interested in this person whose face she's taken. And she, in the end, her kind of thing is like she's happy that she got some resolution for that person who's murdered, and that she took on the form of someone who didn't get to live her life. And she appreciates this human because that human also had a dream to become like a jeweler and that kind of thing. It gives her that kind of connection to humanity. To find someone similar to her whose form she took.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, pretty good. But I mean, like, freaking bowling assassin is my favorite part, easily.
But what if the humans are the real monsters?
I mean, a bunch of them are real dicks, so yeah, I could see that being the thing. Do you really want to be human? Some of them are assholes.
That seems to be like Bellow's, like, point of view is very, I guess, resigned to, Why we don't become human? Because it'll all be a waste of time then. I'm just playing a part. I'm not going to get into it at all. Like, very much coming down on the negative end of it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, at one point, like, it's kind of suggesting his apathy towards the ideal. Like, he's doing really well in House of the Dead, but he gets distracted and he's getting mauled by I did appreciate the crappy CG zombies that are in the game. And it's kind of like taking him out of it, because it's obviously like, well, these are just like fighting monsters, and this is kind of like just my life. So, yeah, I'm guessing we're going to get his episode and his point of view soon. Yeah.
Visually, was it much the same?
Sorry?
Visually, was it much the same?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, all fairly decent. Like, again, that when that bowling assassin, just some crazy fucking shit happens. Like, I just recommend watching that part.
All right.
If you're going to watch anything.
I think I will.
I mean, like, that's fodder for a fucking panel easily.
I don't know. Well, is it just to see this outlandish character in action?
Yeah.
More than anything else?
It's super outlandish. And if it, like the water clown thing from the last thing, I was like, ah, that's okay. But this one was like, oh, yeah, this is on point. If they do more stuff like this, I'm sticking with it.
Next up, it's Toei time. One Piece. Episode 894, Here Come the Legend of Ace in the Land of Wano. In which, in order to thank him for rescuing her and allowing her to make friends with that baboon that the Kaido pirates had sent against her, Otama takes Luffy back to her house and cooks him rice. But then, oh no, that rice was meant for her birthday, which has upsets her master, what's his name, Tengu Yama Hitetsu.
I was going to say it's just Tengu something, isn't it?
Yes. I'm now...
Mr. Tengu.
Yeah. Now I've seen him in colour and animated, I still don't know whether he's a guy wearing a Tengu mask or whether that is his actual face. I'm leaning more to it being his actual face.
He just names him when he was born. No, this kid is just a Tengu. That's what we call him. Tengu Mero.
Yeah, see, like, I keep thinking that in One Piece is like, is this guy, I forgot his name, something the Kappa they keep talking about? Is he actually going to be a Kappa? And then it's like, yeah, he's a Kappa. So it's just like, they don't give a fuck.
He's just some weird looking short dude. this nickname and that, and I guess it stuck, and then he made it into his badass outlaw name.
Yeah, and if his wigs are real, then that suggests that there's some sort of sky island that he came from.
Which kind of wing did he have, actually? Was it the cornered or the shouldered wings or the ones that just kind of go straight up? You know, bent down or bent up? Because that's like two different sky pier kind of things.
There is, but there's other sky islands separate to sky pier that we don't know of yet.
But that they have like different wings is how you tell the difference.
Yeah, I can't remember which way, if it resembles either of them. Anyway, yeah, he's mad at this pirate here eating the rice. But then Tabra explains, no, it's because he rescued me, he saved me from, saved my life. But then she falls ill because she drank water from the contaminated river. Then Intensu explains that Tabra was waiting for this other pirate who'd been here once before, Ace, who'd saved their village. And Luffy's like, well, just bluntly tells her that Ace isn't coming back. He's dead. It's like, well, you could have told her, you could have waited for the right time. But I think Luffy's right in this case.
Maybe tomorrow when it's not her birthday.
I think Luffy's right in this case. It's like, he didn't want to lie to her.
Yeah, give her false hope.
Yeah, and then they learn about how Ace was here, and it's like, why they were the pair of them waiting. She was waiting for Ace, and he was waiting for the village to be revived after it had been... It'd been destroyed a year ago by X-Drake. So we see him briefly in action. We get a brief glimpse of his dinosaur form again. And
They keep keeping his dinosaurness so fucking brief. I figure he has something really cool planned, and I'm going to be worried if he doesn't.
But then they have so many dinosaurs in Kaido's crew, so I can't have his whole... it doesn't feel so special anymore. The dinosaurs are everywhere.
Like, I figure he's got to have some dumb way of being a dinosaur that's going to be visually fucking stupid and great, you know?
It's got to be a tiny arm, right?
It's got to be the tiny arms, like, because his thing is he has a big axe, but if he has a big axe and tiny arms, and, like, it's like a child's axe and, like, a fully grown dinosaur's arms, that kind of way. Is that it? I don't know what the joke is going to be. Anyway.
Yeah, and obviously there's other stuff going on with him, but it was like, oh yeah, how deep undercover is he if he's, like, destroying villages? If he's undercover at all. But
yeah,
that is kind of the assumption you'd have from what we know about his youth. And the possibility that he mirrors... what was Doflamingo's brother called?
Corazon.
Yeah, that he's, like... He's the guy who's been sent deep undercover... into Kaido's ranks.
But has taken to it rather than...
Yeah. Possibly, yeah, because he could go the other way because of... But the same, he's got the same thing as Corazon of, like, being... Like, Corazon, obviously, the world noble. But it ends with another one of the worst generation showing up right at the end in search of this pirate, this outsider who's made landfall. It is Basil Hawkins...
We only see him in shadow in the prior episode, wasn't it?
Yeah, but
the phone, basically, yeah.
Yeah, we see his eyebrow and shirt and arm, and then the full face of him. And this is where we kind of get to his, the recurring thing which throughout the arc, which again makes you question what he's up to, is they're like, what should we do? Don't tell Kaido. He'll handle it. We'll shortly find out why, the relationship between the, what's their role? They're called the headliners, aren't they? The ones who are in charge. And Kaido. But we'll have to wait, because next week it's a filler arc and a side story, I believe they're calling it. in which Luffy and Hancock get in a fierce fight against the an army of the world's strongest bounty hunters. To encourage you to go and see One Piece Stampede in the cinemas.
Hmm.
As if you needed encouragement.
I will. Don't need... I'm going already. Stop nagging me.
Rightio. Next up, we've got Pretty Cure Episode 24, Heart Melting Concert at the Ice Snow Planet.
Yes, in which the Pretty Cure gang to go to the Ice Snow Planet. And they meet a snowman there, and his nose is one of the pens of the raptor. But he needs it because he's trying to impress his ice lady, kind of like a Yuki Ona who is flitting about. She's the prettiest thing on this planet, and maybe if he has the most handsome nose, he'll be able to impress her and ask her out. Meanwhile, Mike Madoka then is just like, she was thinking back to a recent piano recital that she was she played, because she was thinking, oh, with all this puker business, I've been falling behind, maybe a little bit of my piano practice, because I got some new things, got clubs, got archery club, I got school, a student council, and just kind of getting worried, oh, is all my puker stuff impacting on everything that's going on in my life, but I don't want to give up the, what could happen with the girls, it's too important, I got to find a good balance, what's wrong with me? But she's thinking as well, there was a girl at the recital that she felt performed much better than her, but Madoka wound up winning the prize because she was technically more proficient. But the crowd was getting into the other performance of the same piece a lot more. She's kind of wondering, what's wrong with that? What am I missing? And so, like, on the Ice Snow Planet, they have, like, a little sort of impromptu concert was Madoka just, like, basically playing spoons on the icicles, getting a tone out of them. As trying to impress the Yuki Ona lady, but it doesn't really work, doesn't really come into effect until Yuni just breaks her idol routine and accompanies the song, and then it gets a little bit more lucid, a little bit more relaxed. The ice lady then is one that gets turned into the monster of the week, and when they defeat it, she finds out she's not actually trying being a kind of cold in this sense, because she laughs so much at everything, she didn't want to embarrass herself in front of the snowman. It's like, oh, she just needed to just relax a little bit and just like let it flow, man. Kind of unwind a bit. It was what Madoka was missing. That, oh, I was playing the piano. I was so concentrated and focused on what I was doing. I wasn't like trying to like get into the rhythm of it. I forgot why I was here in the first place, because I like playing the piano. So it was not a pretty cute stuff that I got going on. So I've just been like way too wound up lately. I gotta relax for every once in a while, especially with my friends. That's all they gotta do. Now, if only we didn't have some more homework to do as well. Oh, man. I gotta do all that when I get back. Well, just kind of relax and learn to enjoy doing homework as well. Shut up. what's happening next week, then? I have forgotten what kind of craziness is going down. Oh, I know what it is. It's just staying on a summer routine to go on to some summer festivals. You can see all the characters in their like, summer festival kimono designs. Ooh, wouldn't that be nice? I can empathize with this in so much as about that they go to the snow planet when it's really hot out at home. And when as hot as this has been the last couple of days here, I wish I could do the same. The pretty good is always there for you. And it's saying what we were all thinking.
Late-breaking Viking news. Episode 2 of Vicky the Viking is called The Trap and involves Vicky hiding in a barrel.
Oh my gosh. Everything old is new again.
Yeah, which One Piece, in One Piece, even more closely, because in the comic it is literally chapter 2 that barrel thing happens in. Mm. And obviously it happens in a story involving a trap in Vinland Saga. I need to probably watch these side by side to just see how closely they hew together.
Yes, Vicky's cousin gets brutally slaughtered in episode 4, right? Which is a clear parallel with the events of episode 4 Vinland Saga, of course.
Next on the list is Rio Soga, episode 18, Great Pinch, Transformation Impossible. So, cold open, red, blue, pink, fighting the Minosaur. Of the week, which I forgot to find out what on earth it was supposed to be, because I don't know what it's based off, but it's it may just be like a rock Minosaur, maybe. They're fighting it, and they discover we can't transform, or we lose our ability. We transform back into our not human forms, because they're not human. Our Ryu tribe forms. What a terrible situation they're in. The Golem Minosaur, apparently. It's constantly saying please, I think, as it's fighting them. So after the credits, we've got Yui constantly begging her father to help her do another one of her Yui Channel videos, and she's going, please, 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 and then Melto, the blue guy, goes, please, wishing, and looks things at, like, looks on the internet, and they discover, oh, there's a wishing stone nearby. We're going to investigate that. It turns out the emotions of this inanimate object are what has created this Minosaur. And it's been currently being cordoned off by a Shinto priestess, and also Canelo's there helping out because she's attractive, and he's hoping to ask her to marry him. And so our five heroes wander up, and they go, oh, that's the stone. That's what's causing the problem. And so the black member, Bamba, Riosol Black, just goes, oh, well, this is simple to take care of. I'll chop that stone. I'll destroy the stone. And Kanoda's like, no, this is... The reason they're binding it up is because the priestess says that because people have wished on it so much that the stone is tired and emotional. So, therefore, we shouldn't... people shouldn't wish on it for a while. Also, people have worn it away with their hands from pressing on it so often. Canales thinks he's convinced Bamba not to attack it, but as soon as his back's turned, Bamba just slices it in half. Which they're about to start a fight between them, and Ko, the red guy, says, no, we're friends, we shouldn't fight. And Canales like, I'm not this guy's friend. Which is important because they haven't really had that much interaction. They've been careful not to have Ryosou Green and Ryosou Black with Canelo all that much, as they've introduced him. I'm trying to remember what happens in order next. So they think they've defeated the Minosaur, because obviously they finally had the chance to kill the source of the Minosaur, after that's what they'd wanted to do much earlier on in the series, where it was humans. But, oh no, the Minosaur's still here, and... Now, there's two of them, and they realise, oh yes, if you chop a stone in half, it doesn't kill a stone. You just now have two stones.
And so they're grinded into a fine powder.
Yes. Then we get like a comedy sequence where they're doing... Yui's video is basically the... What are they called? Like the bamboo noodle things where you run the noodles down in water, down the bamboo, and you eat them as they go past you.
Okay.
And she's trying to film that, but the pink ranger, Asuna, has positioned herself further up the bamboo than Yui, and she eats all the noodles before they even get to Yui. Further maintaining the running theme of Asuna is always eating. Earlier in this episode, she had a massive bag of popcorn in her hand.
But did you see her eating the noodles that were further up?
Yes, she wasn't. We didn't see her eating the popcorn, but we did see her eating the noodles.
Okay. I thought it might just cut back and she has, yes, like, you know, her cheeks popped off, that kind of one.
The problem is the Minosaur's absorbing wishes. So basically, the reason they can't transform is because they wish to defeat the Minosaur.
Nope.
And also, because the stone's an inanimate object and people keep on making wishes on the stones, is that this Minosaur can grow and grow and grow, unlike the humans who run out of energy. And also there's two of them. And also, Creon runs in with a bunch of the, like, grunt fighters into a cram school and chases all the teenagers out of the cram school saying, wish on that magic stone and you'll get into the college you want. In order to power him up.
Not very subtle, but I suppose effective.
And so what they do is, basically, they have to go, we have to think about not what we want, but what we don't want.
Ghostbusters.
Yes, we don't want the monster to harm people. We don't want all these things, and our chivalry will allow us to transform and kick the monster's ass. And they do this by combining, furthermore, so that our two brothers of dinosaur, two dinosaur brothers last week combined together to make one mecha. This time they combine with Tiramigo to make another new mecha, which allows them to... So basically Red and Canelo, Red and Gold are now fighting together, controlling the thing. And they blow everything up, and then they come to a solution with the stones. Is now there's two of them, they can take days off. So one can be working one day, and the other one can be resting the next day.
Oh, that's ideal.
It is. And the priestess says, yes, the stones agree to that. They think that's a great idea. And then Canelo says, would you like to go for a meal with me? And she says, yes, can I bring my husband as well? And then he mechanically turns around and wanders off very robotically. And that's your punchline. It's like, once again, Canelo has not found the bride he's in search of. Next week, Tiramigo takes a stroll. It looks very promising because the preview footage has a tiny Tyrannosaurus Rex playing baseball by holding a baseball bat in his mouth.
Adorable.
He also appears to be going to school as well. Yeah, looks fantastic.
Dinosaur Junior, yes. Yeah.
I do love that there's no explanation. It's just assumed that you're fully on board with the idea that this stone... just fully on board with animism in general. With the inanimate objects.
That's a core belief of, Shinto.
Yeah.
And if you're watching this show, you have to be on board with some wackier fucking concepts.
That's true, yes.
Robot dinosaurs, that's something I can get behind. Wishing's gone, that's just some magic shit right there.
That's crazy!
Righty, and finally, Gengage no Kitaro, episode 65, Nation Founding, Mabio's Great Tottery Empire. I love this episode.
I like the way, like, last week's preview did not fucking spoil the fucking sheer everything of this episode.
A terrifying parallel universe where Tottori does not have Shigeru Mizuki to be its main tourist attraction.
Yeah, pretty much. So we can't settle Kitaro
well,
here.
Well, I'll say, they still do, though, because at one point...
They
tell you to go to Mizuki Road and buy all the Kitaro merchandise you can.
But that's them telling us, the audience. They're not telling the people in that universe to do it.
So this time they're all going on holiday, and they're like, "Oh, this time it'll be fine. We're going on holiday, Manda's going to be there, we'll have a good old time." Kitaro's moaning, he still doesn't know why. He needs to go with...
It's basically like, you know, that advertisement's like, I don't want to go there. He's like the bratty kid or teenager or whatever. And as it goes through the episode, he's like, wow, these pears are delicious. You know, he's been won over, besides with the mind manipulation stuff.
Yeah.
Now, wait just 1 minute, kid, or I'll try one of these local delicacies.
Yeah, exactly.
But when they get there, they have to need their passports because apparently Tottori has seceded from Japan and it's now its own empire.
We can do all right by ourselves, better out than in.
That's the mayor's solution, apparently, to the what do you call it? Urbanization, where everyone's like moving out and everything.
Yeah.
So like, well, if we're our own country, then that'll bring the punters in.
All right. But while it is against the law to be negative about Tottori in any way, or bring in any kind of foreign newfangled treats or sweets or boosters or customs either, here you're going to do this a Tottori way.
I did like the policeman like stopping Ketchik and like is like, hey, are you eating Pocky? You can't eat Pocky. You got to eat these pear sweets. We can go to the pear factory. You can visit this fucking thing. And she's like, wait. It's like, hold on. Now you're just giving me tourist information.
These are pretty good, I guess, but yes, they're great. Enjoy them in good health, citizen.
And you have to bow to the local idol as it walks past.
It's not just one pair, that's three pairs stacked on top of each other. That's sacred, man.
Very noble. Very, very, very wealthy lineage.
Yeah, so this is all the work of Governor Nozawa, but and everyone seems to be under his spell, except Mana's uncle. He's the one who's suspicious, and he realizes that the governor's been replaced because his jokes aren't as good as they used to be. Because even though he didn't like the governor's policies, he did appreciate his sense of humor.
And we butted heads on social policies now and again, but his jokes were on fucking point, man.
And he got a massive notebook of the ones he'd taken down.
Yeah. No, he's taken down every joke that the governor has made. He's a big fan of his comedy routine.
Well, he knew something was off when he told a joke and it didn't quite land quite properly. Also, he hypnotized an entire press conference of people. But mostly the joke thing that set me off.
Yeah, he's like revealing that to Kitaro and Mana and stuff. They're like, seriously, Grandpa? And it's like, no. Like, fucking, I saw him hypnotize people with like eye rays. And I was like, okay, yeah, that's probably your case then.
This is after they've been arrested and rehabilitated.
Oh, that cop who's trying to get him into, like, what was it? You have to say you love Totori to the sand dunes or something?
That's it, yes.
Like, you have to scream it. You don't just have to say it.
And then you have to say it with your nose being pinched by a crab.
But you get a choice of crabs after Nekomatsume complains about it.
It's not all bad.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
But then they get blasted again by his eyes, and the uncle protects Mana. But Kitaro and Nekomatsume and Daddy Eyeball, they've all been hypnotized. They love the Great Totori Empire now.
Come visit the Kitaro Museum.
So Mana and the uncle are doing a diehard, sneaking around the crawl space in the governor's office. And
they're trying to find evidence that shit's up. And the governor's straight up turning into a big furry monster, pretty good evidence.
A big devil cat. And, he's taken the essence of the four main attractions of Totori to form a... Was it like the Totori Tonic or something?
Yeah. A super drug that once he releases it, it will make the whole world fall under its sway. Because, his reasons are technically altruistic. He was born and raised here and loves it. So he hates that it's getting depopulated. And he's trying to bring it back. But now it's turned into a world domination plot because that's just how these things go.
Then they chase him to the rooftop, and then Kitaro and Nekomatsume come in with crows, and you think they're here to save them. But
yeah, it's like
playing the music.
It's like, oh shit, the shit's going to get fucked now. And like, no, they're here with crab claws to work for the baddies.
Yes. And the reason the brainwashing didn't work on the uncle...
I thought it was just because he wasn't facing him the first time.
Yes.
But, like, he's getting the full brunt of it this time and protecting Mana from it. But it still doesn't work on him.
Because he loves Totori even more than I do.
Yeah.
So, like, you can't make him love it more than entirely.
Yes. And so he's
You can, because in the scuffle he swallows the entire vial of Totori love potion...
Yeah, when our villain is escaping, like, it's a fucking yokai, but he has to escape on a helicopter.
Yeah, I'll get you next time, Kitaro.
Mana uses the crab claws that Kitaro and Ketchik are branding to, like, throw it at him and stab him in the hand, so he drops the vial straight into her, I keep calling him Grandpa, but the uncle's mouth, and we have to watch him swallow the whole thing. And then fucking Dragon Ball. It's Dragon Ball again.
More like Fist of the North Star, because I can see your pressure
points.
Yeah,
you're right.
It's a bit of everything. There's a bit of Hulk there as well. It's clearly somebody on the animation team likes the Hulk, because that's the second time we've had a total Hulk transformation. but then it goes Fist of the North Star. Then it goes Dragon Ball with the final crab-based attack.
Yeah, aren't all these weak points, like, all the positives about the region, just going through them once again for the tourist board, all your weak points are these things, which are the things that are great about this region. Come visit.
Hares, crabs, nice scenery, the mountains, the coasts, access to schools.
After defeating the villain with... The physical muscle of the Totori place. He talks him down as like the real beauty of the region is the people, man, and the lovely people. And you can't mind control them, man. That just takes away from the beauty of the place, which is their friendliness and their love and the wonderfulness that you get when you come here, come visit soon.
Portery Prefecture is in the heart, Mr. Burton.
I'm surprised, like a little fucking logo for the, like, the advertising doesn't come up, like, after several speeches in this fucking show. It's amazing.
And more of it next week.
What a great place to visit. There's so many, like, crazy adventures happening here. I want to go right now. Where do I sign up?
Get away from the heat and humidity and go to the coast. This was a cracking episode. Apparently, based on the wiki, there's no description of the manga, but it says Mabio is an English yokai in the comic. So I assume it's like some sort of witch's devil cat, or maybe something a bit further back,
or like a black dog or something like that. Sure. But in this case, he's from here.
Yeah, so, the name literally means devil cat. So.
Okay.
Yeah. And yeah, he seemed very fierce. I was like, oh, another cat yokai. Been a while we'd had another one.
Yeah. It was the eyes.
It was the eyes in the way it like sat on the buildings.
Yeah, particularly the end. Yeah. When he's happy that the people love the town they're in.
Like, everyone forgot the brainwashing and everything the mayor did, but it was like, whoa, I woke up from, like, a crazy fever dream, but it turns out my house was full of pear sweets. Turns out they're actually pretty good, and they're like, yeah, fucking, actually, I have a newfound love for the region for some reason.
Yeah.
Everyone's happy about
it. I mean, I like pears anyway, and this was making me hungry for pears watching this.
The only thing that was weirding me out is, like, their pears are spherical rather than, you know, like, pear-shaped. I was like, okay, maybe it's just a different kind of pear. They look like apples to me, basically.
Yeah, well, it's the crunchy of the square watermelon, after all.
That's true. I mean, like, maybe their pears are famous because they're not pear-shaped. I don't actually know.
I don't either. European pears will be brown at the core and have an unpleasant taste if they are tree-ripened. There are several Asian pear varieties. Japanese pears are more round in shape.
Oh, okay.
While the Chinese pears are more oval or piriform, pear-shaped. There you go.
I'm learning so much about pears and Tatori.
Yes.
Edutainment.
Rightio, that's your lot. All wrapped up in a neat little bow. So, before we say goodbye, what's coming up on The Secret of Sailor Madness and Dynamite in the Brain?
Yeah. By the time you hear this, because I would have finished editing it by then, we finally got the posse together to get some criminals who are wanted, drawn or alive, as we pit Phil Servers versus Top Cat to see who is the best guy who was doing that voice, whether animated or live, but also seeing whether like what translates or doesn't from live-action animation, and vice versa. Hmm. With Brian in tow, Phil Silver Show mega fan that he is.
And on Dynamite the Brain, this week currently up will be a episode on Lupin the Third, Goodbye Partner, and then that will be followed by another episode of the anime that didn't make us, featuring Vifam, Irresponsible Captain Tyler, and Vision of Escaflowne, plus some names of non-existent Stop It and Tidy Up characters, which are some of the most tasteless things we've put onto recording. And that was neither mine or Anthony's fault. That was purely the work of our guest, Grace Chan. Yeah, up there with Winner Swim and Lesson with Michael Barrymore. Rightio. Boom and bam here next week with more Let's Go JoJo as we dive into the final two episodes of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
It'll be the last Let's Go JoJo for a while, but...
Well, yeah. Mate, I'll mention something to you after we were finished recording, which we might be able to squeeze another two episodes.
Okay. My gosh. It's a JoJo's Eve miracle.
Honestly, we probably could have done them for the past two episodes, but I didn't think of it at the time. Righty-ho, so we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye. Ciao for now.